Blog Talk Radio.
Going into the corner, Gordie Howe goes in to fight for it. He and Zygenkov have it. Back to Walt, not in front. Here's Bobby Hull, shoots good! Bobby Hull!
Judol tried to make a play. Lemieux steals, and he's up against Raymond Bork and Adam Oates. Coming to the Bruins, they got around both men. Cutting for the net, he's in on goal. Hey! Charlton scores! What a goal!
Brune carries in, rolling in front of the net, and a shot! Desjardins following the play, and he misses the short cut. Here he is again! Scores! Desjardins!
Hockey fans, you're listening to the hard-checking, kick-saving, sudden-death scoring NHL breakdown. I'm your host, Scott Levy, joined as always by George Kurtz of RotoExperts.com, bringing all the on-off fights action, as well as keeping you fans and you fantasy owners fully informed at the top of your respective leagues with our fantasy reports or puck reports, including the IR line update, goalie report, and waiver wire recommendations. Today is, of course, Friday, November 11th, inching closer and closer to the quarter mark of the NHL season. Teams about 16, 17 games in. I don't have to tell a lot of our listeners, really all of our listeners, I suspect, that once you hit 20, 21 games, you're at the quarter mark of the season. And that's really when George and I and the rest of the hockey world really start sinking our teeth into what it looks like their teams are shaping up to it and really have a good pulse on it. So we'll certainly start looking at that. We don't have a plan for this show, but certainly probably next Friday's show, one of the things I want to talk to George about is some of these upstart teams. And then when I say this, I mean the teams that we were expecting to be bad, the teams we were expecting to not be playoff teams, teams like maybe Carolina, Buffalo, Vancouver, that are all doing at least a little bit better than we expected. I think you can even sprinkle Montreal and maybe Ottawa into that as well, and a few other teams. Start looking at those teams and seeing what teams, you know, are any of these teams genuine surprises? Or any of these teams, by the time we hit the All-Star break, going to be right at the bottom five of the league like we might have thought at the start of the season. So we'll start, like, looking into that. And then a little further down the line when we get around Thanksgiving, George and I will probably roll out our team power rankings and really go through the teams team by team in the following weeks of that. But for today, we got a lot to talk about. I want to jump right in because I want to talk about the Chicago coaching change. This is going to be now back-to-back shows. We got coaching change to talk about here early in the season, as well as a couple of hitting incidents, if you can call one of them a hitting incident, and maybe not something more than that, in Lucic and Malkin. Talk a little bit about those and how bad those penalties were or situations were, and they do they deserve a notable suspension or a suspension at all? And then, of course, as we have our show, our fantasy report. So, George, let's jump right in with the Chicago Blackhawks. A standard question here that you expect, and kind of want your overall opinion of what you think about the situation was a change needed in Chicago, in your opinion, and was the coaching change the thing to do there, or is this a GM covering his back? Or, you know, the classic, well, we can't, you know, all the players are bad, but we can't fire 22 players, as we always sort of tend to bring up in these situations, is that, you know, sort of the possibility. And then obviously maybe we'll break it down a little bit more from that. Now, George, you say it almost every time, and I understand where you're coming from, that generally speaking, you don't care for early season coaching changes, because if you're going to make that change, you should have done in the off season, or at least that's how you feel most of the time. But sometimes there are exceptions to the rule. So what's your general sense of this one, George? Was this, again, really deserved? Do you think Quenneville, I mean, he'd been there for a decade. Yes, he won three cups, but the last 2 years has been nearly as successful, getting embarrassingly swept out of the playoffs 2 years ago by a good Nashville team, not making the playoffs for the first time in I don't know how long last year. You know, so some people are saying that maybe Quenneville, you know, tuned him out. You're there a decade. Most coaches, even successful ones, don't last a decade in any one place in most sports nowadays. So, George, you know, what's your take on this Hawks coaching change? George?
I'm not sure this could have been handled any worse. I mean, I'm truly not. For those who don't know, and if you watched the press conference on, Wednesday, when this happened, I mean, you can almost see Stan Bowman's nose growing as it was going on here. That's saying that him and Quenneville had a great relationship, that it's still a great relationship. Everyone knows that's a lie. I mean, Bowman actually, when they fired one of Quenneville's top assistants, Quenneville went bananas. He went even more bananas when the person they put in there was, for lack of a better term, pretty much a spy for Bowman. And he took out one of Quenneville's guys, Quenneville's coaches, to put in a Bowman guy who would then report back to Bowman what's going on. I mean, and you know, it was reported. This is not anything secret here. It was reported there were screaming matches going on between the two. And so to say that there was nothing wrong with the relationship is complete BS. And once you do something like that, you don't do that to a Hall of Fame coach. You just don't do something like that to a Hall of Fame coach. And if you are willing to do that, then you should have fired him right then and there. And that's really how it should have been handled, and I really wouldn't have had a problem with it. But when you're putting in one of your own guys to Quenneville, I mean, can you imagine anybody doing that to Al Arbor or all these other great coaches, Sky Bowman? I mean, come on. I mean, so it was handled poorly. And the press conference sort of became a joke after that. You know, oh, yeah, we had a great relationship. They're paying all the homage in the world to him. Listen, he was there 10 years. He's a Hall of Fame coach, won 3 cups. Are they the same team? No. Is it Quenneville's fault? No. Is it the GM's fault? Yeah, more than it is Quenneville's. And it's his team, he put it together. You know, Quenneville wasn't going to, from what we're hearing now, wasn't really consulted about the Panarin trade. You know, he didn't, or he didn't want it. He was angry about that, too. He thought it was a bad deal. They made it anyway. Now, they may have made it for salary cap reasons, but they've had to make a lot of tough choices due to salary cap reasons. That's why they were sending players pretty much all over the NHL. In some ways, they were a farm system for several other teams because they had to get rid of players. You know, they got Kane, they got Taze, you got Duncan Keith. You know, Seabrook, these are all guys making major money here, so other players have to go. And that's just the way that life is, a salary cap area here. So I think bottom line is this. I think it was handled poorly. I think you probably should have fired Quenneville. If you were willing to put that spy in, your own guy there, and take away one of his coaches, I mean, in my mind, you're pulling off his wings, chopping off his legs, I mean, and you're embarrassing him. And that's ridiculous. You don't do that to Joel Quenneville. You just don't. Yeah, I think in some ways that was done to get him to quit. Because so you wouldn't have to pay him. That's exactly what I think that was. You're going to do pull a stunt like that. So I think that was kind of garbage there. But I think also in today's day and age, with today's players, this is all sports again, not just hockey, not just Chicago Blackhawks. You can go to baseball, football, hockey, probably basketball too. You're not going to see any long-term coaches anymore. You know, there will be no more Al Arbors, guys who were there for 20 years. It's just not going to happen. You know, players will tune you out after a while. And I think Quenneville's message voice may have gone or started to become stale. Oh, players not listening anymore. And maybe they did need a change here. That's just the way I feel here. In the end, that might be good for Quenneville because it may take the Blackhawks several years to really get good again under any coach. Once again, they still got salary cap problems. They don't have the depth they could have here. So in some ways, it could be good for Quenneville. He could sit out now, collect this money, and sort of pick and choose where he next wants to go. And don't kid yourself. There'll be teams lining up around the block to get Quenneville. I guarantee he's already gotten phone calls now about whether anyone wants to coach right away or is going to take some time off, hit the slopes, hit the horses, whatever he likes to do. So I think it could be good for Quenneville in the end to get away here and start fresh someplace else, maybe with a team that he can grow into what he wants it to be, fresh voice in the lockers, and they won't know his voice there. So I think it'll work out for him in the end. For the Blackhawks, once again, they're in cap hell. I don't know. I don't think it matters who the coach is. It's going to take several years for them to get that cap under control. It's not an awful cap, like say the Philadelphia Flyers were several years back. It took them several years to get out of it, but it's in that vicinity.
Yeah, I think you covered all the bases here, George. I mean, this is a situation, I think because of some of the things that you already said, you know, that I felt more than usual. Not that I really disagree with your idea of, you know, if you're gonna fire a coach this early in season, in general speaking, you know, you should have done the off season. You know, but sometimes I'm sort of closer to you on that than other times. This is a situation where I definitely agree because I do think there was that discontent. And honestly, you know, you're right. Quenneville is, you know, not just a very good coach. He's a great coach. You know, but sometimes the time just comes at a certain place between the cap, issues that he said that he has and the fact that he may start tuning him out. I was really starting to wonder that last year at a number of points last season that maybe it was time for Quenzo to move on just because he's been there so long. Taze and Kane have only known him. Not that that's necessarily a bad thing, but maybe it's gotten too comfortable and he has gotten drowned out. But if that is a reason, or and that's a leading reason for you, then I think more than normal it behooves the GM to address that situation in the off season and not sort of feel it out. I mean, although, again, I don't dramatically disagree with you in the L.A. Situation, you know, or at least if you're looking at that situation, you're applying that, you know, that thought process that you have, George. You know, that one I'm a little bit more flexible on because, you know, he'd only been there a year. He did have a successful first year, and now you're going to the season. It's just not working this year. And according to Blake, he sort of saw things as early as training camp that surprised him and disappointed him. So, okay, that makes sort of a little more sense to me in terms of making the move the way they did. You know, so ultimately it's hard for me to disagree with you in terms of this being handled in a very sort of disrespectful way. I think it was two coaches. I know Kitchen was one of the assistant coaches who got fired that Quenville was very close with. He wasn't consulted with, you know, just as you sort of laid it out there. So I can see why there maybe needed to be a change because of that, and that being a very legitimate thing. And again, you can criticize Bowman only. I can understand where there's an argument in terms of how much criticism Bowman can get because, you know, you kind of had to pay these guys when it came to, you know, Kane and Taves. You know, it is a difficult cap situation, but don't forget, they now, with that move that they made with Hossa, they have just under $5 million in cap, or at least that they created $5 million cap space by making that trade and moving into Arizona. So they could, in theory, make a move or have made a move, you know. So they do have a little bit of cap space to work with, especially going into next year when I doubt you're going to be re-signing, you know, Kruger for $2.7 or almost $2.8 million. Probably not bring back then 40-year-old Kunitz. That's another $1 million. Probably not going to bring back a $3 million Ward since you only probably really signed it to cover yourself for, you know, for Crawford's injury. So you have a little bit of money to work with. And then if, and I know this is a big if Sabe can bounce back and be not even that burgeoning 30-goal scorer that we thought he was going to be a couple of years ago, but just a solid 24, 25-goal scorer in that top six, a consistent guy, then you've got pieces to work with here, George, between Crawford and Nett and theoretically, you know, keeping him long-term after his contract runs out next year, you know, and that top six the way it is. Then it just becomes the defense of trying to figure out something to do there and at least putting a competent team there. So I don't necessarily think this is going to be this ugly, okay, we got to wait 3, 4, 5 years for contracts like Seabrook, you know, to run out, and maybe Anisimov, you know, at his $4.5 million, just for the team being a little bit expensive, you know, to handle. So I can see them doing stuff, but, you know, I'm curious to see, especially with embracing the new young coach, you know, who did coach a couple of years ago over in Sweden, for a couple of years in Sweden, but 1 year for the Rockbro minor league team for the Chicago Blackhawks. So not a ton of experience here. So you're definitely going with the young gun here that is sort of starting to become the trend in the NHL. Are you just going with him because you do feel like you're going to have to ride it out with the guys like Seabrook and get and clear some of these some cap space to really do stuff? Or is it going to be a quicker turnaround that some of that cap space that they said they do have to work with a little bit? Are they going to sort of rejigger, you know, sometime in this regular season or next offseason for sort of one more run like L.A. tried to do with this core? Or, like I said, taking long sort of ugly road of, all right, let's miss the playoffs for the next couple of years, get some restock, you know, because obviously being so good for so long has contributed here on top of the tons of salary that you're paying your top-end players. You haven't been getting great draft picks that you're restocking your stores and have sort of, you know, hey, this guy's going to be on my second or third line for the next 5, 6 years, guys coming up. I mean, you might have some potential with that, but you don't have guys that you're, you know, chomping at the bit to get here, you know, in that capacity, which is what's holding this team back. So that's why I'm sort of curious to see, you know, what direction they move moving forward. All right, George, let's jump right into those couple of questionable hits, shall we say. The Lucic one, I would personally say, was more egregious and deserving of our attention, not that we should ignore the Malkin one. But I've heard different versions, as you might expect, on social media, both from fans and from, you know, professionals, pundits and whatnot. when it comes to Lucic of, like, you know, okay, hey, I understand why he did it. Not saying it's not necessarily wasn't, you know, borderline crossing the line, but, you know, this was old school accountability. You know, Joseph had hit Russell from behind, but there's no penalty called, and I haven't really seen too many people suggesting there should have been a penalty called on that, but Lucic didn't like it. So there's your, you know, your accountability, you know, old-time accountability excuse. And then there's the flip side of some people comparing this to the Todd Bertuzzi, you know, Moore hit, where he not only sort of stalked him, but he two-handed him over the back of the head with a stick. You know, Lucic did look like he was essentially stalking Joseph and not even caring about whether the puck was in the play or not, and then obviously jumped on top of him. If you hadn't seen it, I imagine most of our listeners have seen it by now. I mean, the only thing I could say is that with the way that Lucic acted, I was just surprised he wasn't not just sitting on his chest but punching him. He was sort of grabbing him and sort of shaking him a little bit, but he wasn't, you know, punching him, so I don't know, is that a good thing, is that a bad thing? You know, so, George, how do you define this? You know, I mean, is this the kind of thing that says, okay, the NHL should throw their book at him? You know, we can't have this at all. It was like that Bertuzzi thing, suspended for 10, 20 games. Or are you more along the lines of, okay, there's some discipline here, a fine, a game or two, but it wasn't that bad. Where do you fall on the spectrum? And does the NHL need to make a spectacle of Lucic to drive it away from the game? George?
Does have some similarities to the Bertuzzi play, but I mean, not Bertuzzi play, to the McSorley play, but it's not quite the same thing. I mean, yes, he absolutely did, was stalking him. He certainly was, following him all over the ice, didn't care about anything else. He had blinders on for him. I don't think he did use a stick as a weapon, you know, and it's not a major, not to the head. It was a slash. You wanted to give him a slash, probably in plus what I did. I don't have a problem with that either, but We can't forget what the player did. You know, he boarded a player on Lucic's team. Lucic's job is pretty much to protect his players. I am not defending what he did. You know, I really didn't have a problem with much of anything. The stalking doesn't look good because he fought him all against. It doesn't look good. The only thing I had a problem with was when you get on top of him. All right? That's kind of ridiculous. You know, he's a much bigger man than he is. That's where you have to stop. You can't do that sort of thing, yeah. But I, you know, players policing themselves in some ways doesn't bother me. You know, I've said this before. When you take fighting out of the NHL, this is what happens. You get players, small players, who don't have to worry about dropping the gloves doing stupid things. You know, listen, I'm not saying he meant to board him, but he did. The numbers were there. He shouldn't have done what he did. Lou just took exception to it. That's his job. You know, that's why he's there for. This is pretty much old-time 80s, 90s hockey, and obviously before that. You know, now they're trying to get this out of the game here. So I think that's where the issue is there. Did I think he deserved a suspension? I am on the border. You know, I brought up this fellow, Rob Jutkowski. He writes to the Edmonton Sun. And he thought it was the NHL. It was complete overreaction. And I don't. You know, I don't think it was an overreaction. I think what the officials did on the ice was fine. I think the NHL, you know, they gave him the max fine. Should they have suspended? That's where I'm at the border there. You know, the max fine, should you have suspended him a game or two? I mean, it's tough. I think I probably, in this day and age of the NHL, Scott, where pretty much, you know, they want the head hits to be taken out, I'm surprised he didn't get a game. You know, not nothing major. I certainly don't think he should have gotten 10, 20, anything silly like that. But I'm surprised he didn't get a game. Just, you know, okay, we gave him a suspension. You know, it's way we did something, but cause in some ways, I don't think the NHL minded this. They saw the illegal hit. They know what Lucic did. You know, and he did. So I'm really on the fence here. Where it could have gone either way here, but I'm surprised the NHL didn't give him a game. And I think if I was in DPS, I'd have probably recommended a game. You know, you want all the hits like this to be taken out. This wasn't a hockey hit. You know, what Lucic did. It wasn't like, we'll get to the Malkin hit in a second. Well, you know, that's a hockey hit. Or some of these other hits that go on, hits to the head. This is premeditated. That's fairly obvious. That's where Lucic gets in trouble. This is definitely premeditated. He was stalking. He was going after him. So I'm a little surprised they didn't give him a game just for that. But that being said, I'm not upset, which is unusual for me. I'm not upset that they didn't either, because maybe this comes down to, you know, some frontier justice. In the end, the player got what he deserved.
It, you know, George, that's the thing for me. Basically what you were focused on right, you know, there at the end is sort of the premeditatedness, think just from a PR standpoint, that has to sort of be addressed by the NHL. And that's why I wanted at least a couple of games of suspension here. Not a 20-game thing, you know, not necessarily a 10-game thing, but sort of the look on it. And you know what? If you're going to go that all-time hockey route, George, again, we grew up in that same era, you know. So I'm not necessarily, completely against it, especially if you feel it's an egregious case of hitting somebody from behind, you know, or some real cheap shots. Oh, okay. But if you're going to do that, now, he didn't really hurt him on the hit, you know, but he did kind of blindside him, and he knew he was blindsiding him because Joseph had his attention on the puck, and the puck wasn't anywhere near him. So, okay, I might be, you know, on the ice if I'm Lucic and having one intent of tracking down Joseph, but when I get to him, I turn him around and say, hey, we're going to go, and I'm going to hold you accountable. So it's sort of like the, you know, give a guy a heads up, you know, because then you're, in my mind, even cheaper than the hit that you're protecting. You know, so it was sort of like the blindsided, you know, premeditated stalking and then just jumping on top of him and sitting on his chest, how that played out, that I would just kind of felt no go. If he sort of like come up to him and sort of gave him a good, and he was, and Joseph wasn't looking, but he gave him a good hard shove to get his attention and then sort of get, started punching him from there once he sort of got his attention. Yeah, I guess I'm a little bit more okay with it. And then I'm fine with just sort of maybe a fine, you know, or something, you know, minor in terms of discipline. But it was sort of how we stalked him and how we blindsided him that sort of makes it, again, on a PR level, that I think the NHL should not have, ignored. On the flip side, well, it's not, I don't know if I'd say the flip side, but moving on to the Malkin situation with Oshie, one of the reasons why this got my attention is because he was immediately ejected from the game. You know, and part of the reason given, at least at the time, was that the refs felt it was, not premeditated, but done on purpose, and he could have avoided it. And I guess on this one, I sort of see both sides of the fence, you know, because they were coming together, Oshie and Malkin. And I felt that Malkin could have maybe moved or maybe not driven into Oshie quite as much. But at the same time, Oshie's head was the level of Malkin's shoulder, you know. And if they were going to make contact, yes, I felt that Malkin moved into him a little bit. But I don't feel like he sort of like saw him coming 3 seconds away and lifted up his elbow and Oshie skated right into the elbow. I just don't know how egregious I thought it was, whether it deserved an ejection, let alone any look at the NHL. You know, so do you feel differently here? Did you feel like there was more intent there and that this should be looked at closer and maybe more discipline there? Or are you like me, George, you're more on the fence of the situation and also question whether an ejection should have happened? George, what's your feeling on the Malkin Oshie hit?
A couple of things. Watching this, I have no doubt Malkin did it on purpose, that he saw him do what he did. That being said, when I need to see multiple angles to determine if the hit was to the head, if he moved, then you're not getting suspended. You're just not. The movement was so subtle, you know, that I couldn't suspend him for that. So what I thought was, all right, you got kicked out of the game. That's fine. That's good enough for me. Do I think they might have overreacted to it? Yeah, I do. But I had no problem with the ejection. Once again, it's the mandate in the NHL nowadays. Can't hit to the head. What you said is absolutely correct. Oshie was going in almost head first. He was going to get hit the head no matter what. It was weird the way he was hitting him. It may have been just a bad day for Oshie. You see, the Malkin did. He got high stick in the face earlier in the game as well. I mean, this guy was a human magnet as far as getting hit. But I have no doubt Malkin did this on purpose. I mean, we all play hockey. We all, I think even Oshie said it was sort of like a backwards check, which we've seen from time to time from players do when they know they're going to get hit. And I think that's what happened there. I think part of it was Malkin bracing for the hit, and part of it he knew, but, I get him. You know, that sort of thing is there as well. So I think they should have ejected him? I mean, I think in hindsight, I would have rather just seen a 5-minute major, keep him in the game, you know, that sort of thing. But the ejection doesn't bother me either, because when I say it doesn't bother me, because that's the rules. You know, I'm not going to fight against the rules. Whether or not you think it's the right or wrong thing, you hit the player in the head, you're out. He did make a move. It was a very subtle move, a very slight move, but he did make one. Oshie got hit in the head. Do I think Oshie deserves some of the blame for this? Yeah, I do. You know, it was just weird the way he was going in there. So I'm glad they didn't suspend Malkin. Not because I think he's an angel. I don't, you know. And I know, you know, when it comes to angel and star players, you're like, oh, God, here we go again. But this is one situation where I think they got it right, you know, where they shouldn't have suspended him. And I think they did get this right. I think the officials on the ice have a tough job here because any hit to the head, you know the NHL wants you to punishment. Sort of what you hear in the NFL. Penalize first, you know, then we'll review it later. I think it's what the officials did here. They penalized and threw him out. You let the NHL worry about fine suspension. You know, I think that's where the NHL wants it called, by the way. So I don't think the NHL berated these refs at all, not in the least. I think that's what they want here. You know, if I was a referee and they did berate me, I'd be pretty ticked off. You know, you can't have your cake and eat it too. You want hits in the head punished heavily. He hit to the head, we punished it. You know, so it's tough. The NHL is a quick, fast-moving game. But in this case, like I said, I think as someone who plays hockey, I think Malkin saw it coming. Like I said, I do think it was half defensive, just raising your shoulders. But I also think he knew in the end, I'm going to get this guy. You know, and that's sort of what happened there. So I really didn't have much of a problem with it. And it's one situation where I'm glad there was no supplemental discipline.
Well, you know, I think, again, for me, I think you hit on all the major points. You know, I guess the thing about the ejection is that, okay, they're inconsistent with it. I understand that it's the rule and that's the way it's supposed to be, and I'm totally fine with that, but I feel like there's plenty of other situations and similar hits where they have not ejected a guy. So I guess that's one of the reasons why I sort of lean towards the preference that you suggested of my preference would have been a little bit more of a five-minute major rather than ejection. But again, it's part of the rules, so yes, I'm fine with it, but then just be consistent with it, which you know, obviously is something I continually say over and over when we talk about discipline and penalty calling is me just saying, okay, I'm fine with really whatever you're doing for the most part, but just be consistent with it. All right, let's turn our attention to the fantasy report, starting off with the IR and line support as usual. Lots of news coming out of Anaheim, as always, when it comes to injuries. Getzlaff and Manson, as you may have already heard, back in the lineup for the Anaheim Ducks, so they are slowly getting healthier as Kase, Comtos, and Nick Ritchie are all practicing. Comtos is in a, you know, he can have contact. Kase and Ritchie still practicing a non-contact jersey. It looks like Comtos could be back in the next couple of games. I do expect probably three or four, maybe five games for the other two before they get back, but Anaheim slowly but surely starting to get healthy, and I feel like I say this every year with the litany of injuries that they've had for like three of the last 4 years, but when they do get healthy, this looks like a lineup that, I don't think it's a top five lineup, not by a long stretch, but it definitely looks like a playoff potential team lineup, as a lot of people were, you know, sort of picking them at the beginning of the season, especially if some of those younger guys, like Akase in particular, continue on what he started last year with his chemistry with Henrik on the third line. With Getzlaff coming back in the lineup, I was actually a little surprised to see Ease move up that top line with Getzlaff and Reichel so soon. As I've said a number of times in recent weeks, I expected that to eventually happen, but Ease looked really rusty these first couple of games, really rusty, that I just thought it would take a half a dozen to eight games, maybe a little bit more, before he sort of got back into the groove that they'd feel comfortable doing that, but maybe they were just trying to sort of reignite the chemistry that they had a couple of years ago when Eves first came to the Anaheim Ducks. As I mentioned on Monday, Silverberg back on that line he's been on the last couple of years for the most part with Kessler and Cagliano, Henrik centering Aberg and Lidstrom, at least until some of those other guys come back, who I think will nestle into that third line with Henrik when they do return. In Arizona, Goligoski, I know he's a low-owned defenseman of fantasy, so I'm just going to give him a little bit of mention with the lower body injuries, got him listed as day-to-day. And Panik and Perlini taken out of the top six. Looks like they've been put with Dylan Strom in an attempt to sort of prop up Dylan Strom a little bit. So you got this sort of the Galyanchuk-Keller pair that looks like they're committed with and the Stefan Fischer pair that they're committed with in top six and sort of rotating people in and out there. I know right now, at least, that's not much of a big fantasy hockey look, but as I've mentioned, this Arizona team starting to find its offense. So a team to keep your eye on. for at least some depth in deeper league fantasy streamers and maybe even fill in at the back of your roster. In Boston, McAvoy, they have finally confirmed what we already pretty much strongly suspected, which it is indeed a concussion for McAvoy. There is no timetable for him to return, although he is skating, which is, of course, at least a pretty good sign that it's not a bad situation and symptoms right now. In Calgary, James Neal rejoining that second line with Tkachuk and Backlund, certainly something a lot of fantasy owners were looking for and expecting Neal to be in that top six. Hasn't happened much so far in the early season, so obviously if you're a Neal owner or Neal's on your free agent wire, situation you sort of keep an eye on to see if it sort of ups his fantasy value. In Chicago, Kuhn, at least in the first game with the new coach, back up on the top line with Taze and DeBrincat, and then Thade dropped down to third line. It'll certainly be interesting to see if that stays or if we see in the coming games. I imagine Colton is going to want to, the new coach for Chicago, going to want to at least have a few games to sort of settle in and let things play out, but it'll be interesting in three or four games to see if he starts making any notable tinkering to that line. Obviously, it's something we'll keep an eye on. In Colorado, I'm not telling fans to start jumping for joy or fantasy owners to run out and start picking these guys up, but it is notable that the last 2.5 games they've got a new second line, and it's looking reasonably good together as they put the youngster Dries in centering Kerfoot and Colin Wilson. Now, Dries in his first three games, 2 goals and assists centering that line. He is 0% owned, as you might expect in fantasy. Kerfoot in the last 3 games, 1 goal and 3 assists, 8% owned, and Colin Wilson, 1% owned with 1 goal and 3 assists in the last 3 games. So, again, if you're looking for a streamer option, you got a hole, you like the matchup, maybe pick up one of these guys, but it's really more of a for fans and fantasy owners to say, hey, keep an eye on this. If it's another 3 to 6 games, they're keeping up this early production, maybe you have something that you can look at. So just keep your eye on that situation. In Dallas, Klingberg with an upper body injury lands him on the IR. He's expected to be out 3 weeks for the Dallas Stars. And Rogalov with the lower body injury that's been affecting him, and we've talked about a lot about, he is put on the IR, but retroactively to the 30th, so he can actually come off the IR at any time. It does look like he's going to be out another couple of games, and this is sort of put on the IR so they can call somebody up to replace him for the interim. So it's still expected Rogalov will be back sooner rather than later, but again, I do expect another 2 or 3 games before he gets back in that lineup. While he's out, Nishichkin, who has been in top six, moved up top line with Ginn and Devon Shore, who I mentioned on Monday is a player to keep an eye on as he's been producing well. And the young rookie who was heavily involved in the potential Carlson trade in the over the summer, Gurlanov, has been called up and put on the second line with Spezza and Ben. Again, just something to keep your eye on. Nielsen and Athiasio will be coming back in the lineup for the Detroit Red Wings tonight. I know all you fantasy owners are running to your free agent wire on that news. Edmonton, we talked on Monday about that right wing situation. Ratty did get back in the lineup, and he's right back up on that top line with McDavid and Ryan Nugent-Hopkins, and obviously that affects Cagliari, as he is bumped from that top line down to the third line with Strome and for Lucic. So anybody maybe at least thinking about streaming Kegula could probably let it go to the wayside for the time being. In Florida, tweaking the lines there as well, as Hoffman has sort of slowly been moving his way up the lineup. Don't forget, a couple of weeks ago, he was promoted for a game to the fourth line, then was 3 or 4 games on the third line, moved up to the second line. Now open the back up at the top line with Barkov and Dandanov, and he has been producing pretty well to justify it. Vetrano given an opportunity in top six with Trocheck and Huberdeau. Bustad bumped out of the top six there. In L.A., the only sort of semi-notable thing with the new coach that they have there is that Kovalchuk has moved back in the top six on a line with Carter and Toffoli. Keep an eye on that situation, see if it breeds any production. In Montreal, Armia with a knee injury is going to keep him out 6 to 8 weeks before he returns. Having okay of production there on the third line and playing with the rookie Kotkaniemi, but Armia had 3 goals, 4 assists, which 7 points so far from the third line isn't so terrible. But also news coming out of Montreal, Pekanic, the old veteran, the club and him have come to agreement to terminate his contract. He's going to retire from the NHL. He might play overseas, but he wanted to help them out with the cap. as well as retire a Montreal Canadian, so they sort of came to this agreement, so they will have a little bit of money coming off the cap. And it's also good for Montreal because they had too many forwards, and Bergeron was sort of, I know he was concerned about having to put somebody through waivers that he was pretty sure that he was going to lose. Obviously, this helps that situation a little bit for the Canadiens. In Nashville, Arvidsson with that lower body injury is practicing. Was at the morning skate yesterday, but he did not play for them. It looks like he's going to miss probably another game, maybe two, before he gets back in the lineup for the Nashville Predators. For the New Jersey Devils, Bratt finally coming back from that jaw injury. Looks like he's going to start on the second line with the rookie Cine and Marcus Johansson, with Zajac being bumped down to the third line there. And Miles Wood, who's been getting a lot of second line time recently, bumped down at least temporarily, centering the fourth line for the New Jersey Devils. A little tweaking for the New York Islanders as well, as Anders Lee and Josh Brayley rejoin playing with Barzal as your new top line for the New York Islanders. Eberle, they put him back with Barzal, hoping to sort of reinvigorate that chemistry that they had last year, but it wasn't really working, so Eberle moved down to the second line to play with Brock Nelson. For the New York Rangers, Matt Zuccarello with the groin injuries got him listed as day-to-day, already officially out for Friday's game. Look for him to miss another game or two before he gets back in the lineup, but the Rangers did get back the rookie Howden from his upper body injury as well. Spooner is taking Zuccarello's place with Hayes and Kreider on that second line. And as we were teasing our last couple of shows, Brady Tkachuk did return for the Ottawa Senators, playing on the line with Tierney and with Bobby Ryan and George. I just have to pause here for a moment and just ask you, I wasn't planning to sort of pursue this, but it just sort of became a little bit of a viral hockey story with a bunch of Ottawa Senators taking an Uber in Arizona, and the driver recorded them saying not so great stuff about their coach and their system overall. It sort of blew up in Ottawa and at least in Canada a little bit. Now, George, I think the one nice thing in the early this season is that Ottawa hasn't quite been the tire fire that a lot of people thought they were going to be. I thought they could be possible, and that they were playing at least respectable hockey, and it looked like, okay, it's going to be a year of some nice development. So maybe Ottawa's just not as bad a situation as we thought it was going to be. This little story begs the question if that's not the case, and I'm just kind of curious if, for you, is this just a media story that we latch onto and people talk about, or is this kind of a worrying enough sign to you that it is going to be a tire fire or develop that way in Ottawa? Because, you know, frankly, George, you know, at least from a fantasy hockey standpoint, you know, guys like Tkachuk and Matt Duchene in particular, a couple of names that come to mind, maybe Mark Stone, to a lesser degree. Okay, well, Ottawa's not going to be a tire fire. These guys are at least interesting depth guys in deeper leagues. And maybe if you're in a dynasty league or a keeper league, you know, Tkachuk himself has a little bit more interest in maybe picking up and stashing, you know. So from a fantasy hockey standpoint, if this is concerning to you, well, maybe then I'm a little bit less interested in these guys that have started off pretty well. But ultimately, to my original question, George, is this just a story that media latches onto, or is this a real concern for you in hearing about that sort of dissent, I guess, in Ottawa? So, George, the Senators and the story, is it a big deal or not to you?
Well, I mean, everybody complains about their boss. Everybody. And that's essentially what these guys were doing. Problem is, they went public. You know, as you mentioned, this went viral. And by the way, Uber's got to be like, you've got to be kidding me. As if they don't have enough problems. Now they have drivers recording conversations. Forget about it. That's not going to go over well at all. You know, they're praying they can talk out of it. I'm assuming we're crying out loud. But anyway, so everybody complains about their boss. I just sense what these players were doing here. Unfortunately, it got out. You know, and we saw Duchene make an apology. And, yeah, what do you apologize? Are you apologizing for saying what you said? Like I said, everybody's doing that. You think they're the only players on a team that are complaining about something, about their coach? There's nobody's done. Come on. Everybody's doing that if you're
when things aren't going well or things aren't going great. Even if things are going great, you're probably complaining, whether it be about the ice time you're getting, who you're playing with, you know, why this coach only has me out there on the second power play, not the top power play, why am I doing this, why am I my third? I mean, come on. We can go on and on about players complaining. The thing is, it got out there. That's what makes this look bad. And it makes the coach look, specialty coach look bad. You know, it does. So the apology can only do so much. It's still, the words are still out there. You know, you hope everybody can grow and go past it. Maybe they can, maybe they can't. So do I think it's a huge thing? You know, when you look at it, when you just take it apart, no, it's really not, because I said everybody does this. But because it got out there, because, you know, now you had to make apologies for it, you know, people are going to be looking strange, I guess, closer now at the power play, at penalty kill unit. You know, it's so things are going to be treated a little different now. But really, in reality, no, I don't think this means much at all, except we all bitch about our bosses. Everybody does it. You know, things you like, things you don't like. You know, so I think that when you take it like that, hockey players are no different. You don't think baseball players, football players, basketball players, soccer players, everyone's bitching about their bosses, about, you know, in this case, the coaches, about what they're doing that they don't like. You know, that's they're hurting them. So I think it's been taken with a grain of salt here. And this story is quickly dying, for that matter, which is a good thing. It doesn't seem to be having, it's going to have all that much legs. But I guess it teaches you a lesson. You know, and it's a lesson these players should have learned, all players should know. Everything's being recorded nowadays. Yes, you should have known that Uber drivers, they record automatically. But we all have these phones, you know, they're called smartphones. They all have cameras, video cameras, microphones. They record everything. When you're a player or anybody, in the, you know, an actor, actress, anybody who's of that popularity, you have to assume you're being recorded 24/7. I mean, really, unless you're in the privacy of your own home, I would just assume you're being recorded.
Yeah, I totally agree that this should be a non-story. And ultimately, I think you're right that because it does seem to be dying already. I guess my only sort of concern or extra concern in this specific situation is obviously you had a pretty bad, you know, locker room situation last year, even though you don't have Carlson and Hoffman there anymore, who obviously were sort of the drivers of that. You know, it's still a little bit of a fragile situation. How much have you rebuilt your culture so far? You know, ultimately, I agree with you, but that's sort of the one thing that's sticking in my head that worries me a little bit of the situation. All right, turning our attention back to the IR Lines report in Pittsburgh. You probably would have heard by now the press conference. Actually, I think it was a radio interview, that the GM Rutherford did, where he went into the team pretty good. Basically saying, yeah, it's just not good enough. Our star players are carrying us. Everybody else after our star players of Malkin, Kessel, Crosby, and Letang have basically been shit. And that's not good enough, and we're very disappointed. And, you know, then a little bit of a line shakeup that just happened with it as well. So certainly it'll be interesting to see if that sort of helps get this team, although defense has really been the main issue. Yes, goaltending has been a problem, but the defense has been feeding, or lack of defense has been feeding the goaltending problem. Scoring has been, you know, pretty well, but still we do have a little bit of a line shakeup with your top line now being Simon, Crosby, and Rust. Hornquist rejoins Malkin and Hoglund, who's had a lot of history with, and Kessel drops down to third line with Sheehan and Gunsell. So obviously Gunsell and Kessel are sort of the big notables here. They're still going to get the power play time, but on the third line, trying to balance out that scoring. And it would be kind of interesting to me, this change, because I think it has some possibilities, but Brassard is still out. Still has not been skating, no hide or hair of him in terms of being around the rink and skating at all. So it definitely seems like Brassard's going to be out for a good bunch of games more before he comes back. And when he comes back, you think at least that third line still, you know, has some potential to put things together. But either way, certainly it bears watching how Pittsburgh reacts the next, like, 3, 4, 5 games after these comments by their GM Rutherford, as well as the lines being shifted around. In San Jose, I told you about those new lines, which I very much support and think will be sticking with Thornton as your third line center moving on from now. But Hurdle, as we did talk about on Monday's show, still has that head injury. He has been practicing, but he's missed last couple of games. Is a game-time decision for the next game. I do think he's going to miss at least one more game before he gets back. Doesn't look like it's going to be long-term here, but it's just a question. Is it going to be 1, 2, or 3 more games that we're going to miss Hurdle for? While Hurdle's out, it does look like LeBanc is on the second line with Couturier and Meyer, which isn't such a bad place to be. And as I mentioned on Sunday, LeBanc is still, but somebody who I'm interested and curious about, keeping an eye on, because with having him on the third line with Thornton could be a really sneaky good thing. Obviously, we've got to see if chemistry develops there, but it's definitely a situation bearing that you watch it. In St. Louis, Braden Schenn with that upper body injury is going to miss. It has been confirmed his second game tonight with St. Louis. Similar to Hurdle, it doesn't look like this is a serious upper body injury for Schenn, so there's still the expectation that's just going to be a couple more games before he gets back in the lineup. But you have to wonder, is this one of those sneaky situations, the upper body injury, a head injury, and the 3 games from now, are they going to say, oh, he has a concussion, he's going to be out for another 2 more weeks. So if you are a Braden Schenn owner, have a backup plan that obviously for short term, but something that you might need to do a little bit longer term, like a week or two, as your backup plan. In Tampa Bay, Hedman is indeed expected to return Saturday, but when it comes to Pilat with his lower body injury, he's now expected to be out up to 4 weeks before he returns for the Tampa Bay Lightning. For the Vancouver Canucks, Boeser with a groin injury has returned home, left the road trip to see a specialist. Officially this says day-to-day, but just the fact that he returned home, you can pretty much assume he's going to miss the next 2 to 3 games minimum before we have a clearer diagnosis. So prepare for that if you have him in your fantasy leagues. And finally, in Vegas, Hula with an undisclosed injury. Looks like he's going to be out for the weekend at a minimum. Cody Eakins is taking his space, centering the second line between Touch and Pacioretty. All right, folks, there is the IR and lines report. Turning our attention to the goalie report, George, what do you have to tell us about what's going on between the pipes around the NHL for this Friday, George?
Well, the big news today is that it came out a couple of hours ago that Tuukka Rask has left the Boston Bruins, personal matter, that's what they're calling it. No idea what that matter might be, but Tuukka Rask has left the Bruins, so you're going to want to get him out of your lineups. We don't know what the issue is. We don't know how long he'll be out for. Now, we have been advising now for a couple of shows anyway to go out and grab Jaroslav Halak, so he may not be available on your wire anyway, but if he is, you should be running, and I mean running to hit that waiver claim for Jaroslav Halak. So Rask out for the Bruins for an unknown amount of time. Halak is the man you want there. Other news, and mostly it's just more of accounting news than anything else, the Rangers' Lundqvist is going to start tonight. Georgiev starts tomorrow. Although Quinn, the head coach, sort of hesitated and goes, well, that's how I feel, right? Anyway, he's leaving open the possibility that if Lundqvist plays great tonight, he could play tomorrow as well. In Montreal, Anthony Niemi is going to start tomorrow. Nothing on Carey Price there. Once again, it's just some just giving him a break there. Calgary. You know, we've talked about a couple of goalies this year, you know, about they're not playing well. Rask was one of them, actually. And how we're hearing noise about the backup should be starting. Well, we're starting to hear that about Mike Smith. Yeah, he's not playing so well. And that maybe David Rittich should get more action in net there. So, once again, it's a situation worth watching. What do you think when we hear this? This is sort of a way for a coach or a GM to wake up the player, you know, letting Mike Smith know, hey, you know, right now you suck, buddy. We need you to play better. You know, and if nothing else is working, I'm sure they've tried other means to get through to him. If it's not working, now they're letting him know, well, maybe your playing time should be taken away. So, once again, a situation worth watching. Would I run out and grab Rittich? I mean, if you're a Mike Smith owner, maybe. I do just to cover myself here, but it would depend on what I'm giving up. You know, who am I releasing? Do I have a dead spot on my roster? That sort of situation. So I don't think I'm doing this yet, but once again, situation worth watching. Chad Johnson is going to start for the Blues tonight. Nothing going on with Allen, just they're going to give him a start. It's somewhat curious because this is not a back-to-back situation. You know, they don't play it again until Sunday in Minnesota, so it's curious. You know, we've heard rumors about Allen not playing well either. So that's why it's curious, but I think it's just a spot start for Johnson, nothing more than that. Philadelphia, Elliott returned. He was in a relief role as Picard didn't play very well. Elliott came on, got the win there. So Elliott's back. They sent down Alex Lyon, so you know he's good. Leonard returned for the Islanders as well. He was not as successful as Brian Elliott, but he's back for the Islanders. He was back anyway, but this was his first start since the injury. Arizona. Ranta was placed on IR with lower body injury. It's not expected to be long, but once again, we've heard this story before. Their normal guy they would have called up, Aiden Hill, is also out in the AHL with a lower body injury, so he wasn't called up. Instead, they called up Miska. He was recalled, but Darcy Kemper's going to be a starter there for Arizona, so once again, you need a starting goaltender, you go out and get Darcy Kemper there, and you got somebody, and you should be okay for a little bit. Ottawa, Condon was, we talked about it on Monday. He was placed on waivers. Well, he passed the waivers. No shock there. He was sent down to the AHL. Devils, Kincaid's going to start tonight. Schneider did not play very well on Wednesday. He actually played horribly against Ottawa. Where they got wrecked in that game. So Kincaid starts in this game. This is not a back-to-back situation, but maybe they just want to keep him away from Toronto. Got too low. The Devils are playing tonight. So Kincaid gets Toronto tonight. I expect Schneider to be in there against, let's face it, not much of an easier task when he gets Winnipeg on Sunday. In San Jose, Dell is expected to start tonight for the Sharks, and Minnesota Stalock is expected to start for the Wild.
All right, good goalie information as always from you, George. You know, the follow-up question to wrap things up for you today, you know, both of us have sort of been on and on about or wondering about this early season NHL schedule, but this week we finally have kind of pretty much close to what we consider a normal schedule, and that means lots of games during the weekend, lots of teams playing two games, 17 teams, George, playing two games this weekend. That's by far the most we've had in any weekend so far. 10 of those teams are back-to-back situations, which always facilitates usually a backup goalie having a start. So if somebody's looking in a daily lineup league to stream a goaltender, cover an injury, whatever the case may be, what low-owned number one goaltenders or backup goaltenders do you think have some nice matchups would be of help to fantasy owners for this weekend? George?
Yeah, you mentioned 17 teams have two games this weekend. So, nice. We like that. We like a lot of hockey. It looks like they were just waiting for baseball to end before they really dug into this hockey schedule. Strange. They usually aren't all that worried about baseball. As long as baseball games get great ratings outside of the markets that those games are in. But it could be a coincidence. Maybe there's another reason here, but it looks like the NHL was just waiting for baseball to end, and we're going to start hitting hockey hard and fast here. So, like I said, lots of options here. Arizona, you've already gone over them. They play back-to-back over the weekend. If you need a goaltender, you're going on Graeme Kemper. He's your starter now for at least the next little while. Like I said, we don't know when Ranta comes back. I don't think this is going to be long, as Joe. We were getting reports. When you're getting daily reports that Ranta wasn't activated for this game, that lets you know that they are expecting him back shortly, but maybe not this weekend. Kemper, they're playing at Pittsburgh, at Washington. Not great starts at all. Yeah, but if you're desperate, Kemper could be a man there. Boston, we already said that. We've been saying this for weeks now, that you should go out and grab Halak. He is by far the number one claim out there if he's still on your waiver wire. You're going out and grabbing Halak. You've got a starting goaltender on a good team, and we have no idea when Rask will be back. We talked about Rittich. You know, he's getting at least one start this weekend. They play at the Kings and at the Sharks. Once again, not great if he gets the Sharks game, which I would expect he does, but he's someone you can think about as well. Colorado, Grubauer should already be gone. Columbus, Bobrovsky's playing better, Scott. Playing a little better. You know, maybe, once again, maybe it's just a slow start to the season. Maybe it wasn't the contract, or maybe he's happy, satisfied, whatever it might be. But Bobrovsky is playing better here, so I don't think you're worried about Korpisalo taking that job anymore. But Korpisalo could get a start tomorrow against the Rangers, and that would be a battle of backups. We already said Georgia have expected a start, but the Rangers here might be something you want to look into there. Detroit, we're going to pass. Florida, Luongo also back playing very well. Looks like he's found his groove real quick after the injury. Good for Robbie Lou there. And the Panthers have a nice schedule over the weekend. I understand these teams are playing better than expected. Islanders and Ottawa, but still, you're going to take that. I expect Luongo to get the Islanders on Saturday, and Luongo to get Senators. Luongo to get the Islanders on Saturday, and Reimer to get the Senators on Sunday. I'd be interested in Reimer. He hasn't played all that well this year, but I'd be interested in getting him. Once again, looking at desperation here. You're not looking at guys the top-notch starters here. But good team. Islanders aren't playing well right now. I'd be looking at the Senators. Minnesota already stated that Stalock starts tonight against the Anaheim Ducks. He's somebody else. And Minnesota's a good team, but the Ducks are having all sorts of issues. You know, there's a lot of injuries. You already mentioned with the line changes they always have to make here. There's always somebody going in that lineup, out of a lineup here. Stalock is someone I'm definitely interested in. I do expect Dubnyk to be back against St. Louis on Sunday. Devils, no way. I'm not taking Kincaid against Toronto tonight. Rangers, Georgia, Columbus tomorrow, no. Ottawa, no. San Jose, Dell against St. Louis, that's something I could consider. You know, once again, Blues haven't played as well as we thought they would. I'm not dying to get him in there because some of the Sharks haven't been all that great either. Although they've been pretty good on the road here. But Dell could be somebody looking at here. St. Louis, I'm going to pass. Toronto, I'm going to pass. And Vegas, I'm going to pass. So you have options here. And I'll say it again. If Halak is out there, go grab him. You know, you should be waiting for me to finish that sentence. You should be going to get him here. If you need a goaltender long-term, you're probably looking at Kemper here, even though it may not be as long-term as you wish, but you're going to get some starts in the meantime. If you're looking at maybe playing the long game here, that might be Rittich. Maybe if Mike Smith continues to struggle here, Reimer is the other guy I'm looking at. Dell, Stalock, these are all guys you can get for one game and done.
All right. Some good job navigating through the options for fantasy owners for this weekend, George. Thank you very much. I'll let you go as I wrap things up with the skater recommendations. George already went through all the teams. They're playing two games this week. You know, I'm generally skewering both because of schedule, both for the fantasy schedule as well as the lack of Saturday games. I'm favoring the teams for the most part that are playing Friday and Sunday. Those are your two slower games because most of you daily lineup player fantasy owners in those leagues that have daily lineups are going to have a full schedule on Saturday already, you know. But because of that fact, as well as it being the better option schedule-wise, offensively at least, I'm certainly favoring those teams. San Jose, St. Louis, Washington, and Winnipeg, all Friday, Sunday schedules, and all having some nice, at least offensive potential as well. San Jose playing St. Louis, who obviously, as we've said a number of times, not playing very well defensively, as well as Calgary. So San Jose is a good option. St. Louis, the one thing that they are doing well this year so far is offense, playing San Jose, who isn't at the top of their game defensively either. As well as Minnesota, who's actually obviously pretty solid, but still I like the Blues. Washington's sort of been coming around. They're playing Columbus and Arizona this weekend. Winnipeg playing Colorado and New Jersey also seems pretty promising. Of the teams with back-to-back games that have a Saturday game, Boston is who I'm looking at, playing Toronto and Vegas Golden Knights. If you're just looking for one-offs for tonight, for example, just looking for somebody to cover your lineup for tonight, that's St. Louis. San Jose game team, the players from both teams I'm interested in. Winnipeg against Colorado at home is also intriguing for tonight. I expect, as I said, for you daily lineup owners to already have Saturday full, but just in case you're looking for something, sniff around the Tampa Bay Lightning playing Ottawa at home is also pretty interesting on Sunday. I kind of like that Minnesota game, looking at that Minnesota players against that St. Louis team that is struggling defensively as well. As far as specific player recommendations, I mentioned how much I like San Jose and the fact that Hurdle's going to be out for at least another game, if not two, for this weekend. LeBlanc, even if Hurdle does play, and he's on that third line with Thornton, I still like LeBlanc, the San Jose left-wing, right-wing eligible players, only 20% owned on average in ESPN and Yahoo leagues. In the last four games, he's got a goal and three assists and a power play point, and I've already told you, probably on that second line, but not in the bad third line with Joe Thornton. Either way, you have the St. Louis and Calgary games this weekend, and even bleeding to next week, it looks pretty promising. A tough Nashville game, but then playing Toronto and St. Louis both at home, so you could get a nice week and a half stretch out of LeBlanc, especially if he does end up staying on that second line. Also for this weekend, how about Tyler Bozak, the St. Louis Senators, only 3% owned on average in ESPN and Yahoo leagues, but in the last five games, he's got two goals, four assists, and a couple of power play points, third line with Alex Steen and Shostakov also getting power play time. You have a pretty decent schedule this weekend with San Jose and Montreal, but even bleeding into next week, you're playing a struggling Chicago Blackhawks team and a Vegas Golden Knights team that's starting to come around but not playing defense quite as well as they did last year. So, again, good for this weekend, but might even bleed into next week for you. And then finally, David Krejci, the Boston Bruins, the center, is only 17% owned on average in ESPN and Yahoo leagues. But in the last 12 games, two goals, 10 assists, four power play points. Obviously, if you're looking for assists in particular, he's particularly attractive playing on that second line with DeBrusque and Nordstrom, and they're playing a little more consistently, at least Krejci is, than I think people give him credit for. He got two pretty good matchups this weekend with Toronto and Vegas at home, and then on the road next week to start it off against Colorado and Dallas. So, again, good guy for this weekend, but might even give you a little bit of a boon for next week as well if you need it at least at the center of position. All right, folks, that's all that we have for today. I hope you all have a good hockey weekend. Stay with us every Monday, every Friday at 2 o'clock for all your hockey needs all season long. As I said, have a good hockey weekend, everybody. We'll talk to you on Monday.